Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had
Well, Northquake Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. We got Andrew on the board. S&P Futures. Oh, good here. S&P Futures are down 50 cents. NASDAQ Futures up 15. We've had like 5 days in a row up on the NASDAQ. It's been a huge run up. Matter of fact, we've gotten back everything we lost so far this year. So I guess if you're long and you hung in there, just like they would tell you on TV, you always hang in there. Well, this time it worked again, but maybe one day it won't, but this time it did again. Microsoft announced yesterday that they're laying off 3% of their workforce, which is a lot of people. I don't know if that was expected or not, but I guess we have all that to look forward to if you're being laid off at Microsoft. I don't know how many of their people are locked up in Seattle, if it's a local thing or if it's worldwide or whatever, but maybe Kevin knows more. Do we have Professor Kevin?
We do, and they've got plenty of people working everywhere in the world.
One of the things that I wanted to talk about this morning, I'm trying to find the numbers here, so I'm kind of stumbling around as usual, is how many, do you have any kind of number of how many people overseas work in like call centers from here, and how many people over there do programming for people from here?
I would imagine it exists somewhere in the world, but I don't know where to look.
Yeah, I mean, I was just kind of, as we were, I got sort of turned into this subject. I mean, we've been fighting back and forth about the tariffs and all the other stuff, and I just was wondering. I mean, that's I think the administration and most people, really, when you think about tariffs, think about goods, and yet, because I mean, up until I don't know how many, what, 10, 15, 20 years ago, that's really all you talked about was goods that came over. Now, but a lot of the imports now are really not just services; they're you know, they're people. I mean, they just don't move here. And I just was wondering if that's part of. Does anybody even think that's part of the tariff thing? I'm thinking not, Kevin. I just wonder how big the service piece is. I mean, the reason why I ask this is when you look at your GDP, is composed of consumption, what you and I and Kevin go out and buy. It's also investment. If PTI goes out and buys 5 new computers, okay, that's counted. The government spending is counted. And then you have a net of imports versus exports. And that's one of the alleged reasons why the GDP was down in the first quarter is people bought ahead on the imports. So that's a negative. Okay, so but whether that's true or not, we'll see. It probably is, or at least part of it. And my question is, if we're so hung up now, and if somebody shows up with a car at the port, they're going to get a 10% plus whatever that country has on top of that. Tariff that something has to go to somebody. But one of my clients, and good friend, by the way, is aware of this company. One of his family members works there. It was one of these advertising deals, Kevin, where it's, I don't know that much about worldwide advertising, but evidently there's six companies or five that are at the top of this game. One of them's from Europe, and then the second one is this OMC, and the fourth one is this IPG. Well, of course, OMC has to take over IPG, and our useless Justice Department, through every administration since Reagan, damn near approves every merger. You know, they approved, I think they approved, was it yesterday or recently, Kevin? They approved the Discover Capital One merger. Which, does that mean Discover is going to, I'm going off topic here as usual, does that mean Discover is going to stop their processing? So there's only going to be three processors yet, Visa, MasterCard, and American Express? Discover was the fourth, right?
Probably eventually, yeah.
Well, I mean, we have people that are, these decisions really make huge amounts of difference. I mean, this OMC now has laid off 2,000 people at IPG, and then I guess they laid off a bunch of people at their place, and they're planning on doing some massive centers over in India. The person was telling me this, was talking about, you know, 7,000 to 11,000 people are talking about. Now, I don't know if it's worldwide or in the U.S. or whatever. Boy, oh boy, your terrorists better get a hell of a lot more jobs coming this way. That's a big chunk of people. I mean, I guess the question is, if you decided, Kevin, to have a group of people in India or someplace, or a call center in the Philippines, and you send a check over to pay for these people, I don't think that's counted as a, it should be an import of service, shouldn't it? But I don't, is that counted in the tariffs?
Again, you're asking me a question, I don't know the answer.
Well, I don't either, that's why I asked you.
I know, well, I don't know.
My guess is, in theory, it probably ought to be. I wonder how that's enforced, if at all. I mean, how would you even do it? I mean, so you could pay for them out of London, I wouldn't even know they're coming here, right?
I don't think you would.
But actually, what I was thinking about it, this stuff's lately, even though everybody's jousting about everything, a lot of this is all kind of the same, sort of the same topic, Kevin. I mean, it's like when you talk about people with market dominance, a monopoly, whatever you want to call it, it seems like if you get to be a monopolist, you can basically piss all over people service-wise, right? I mean, at some point you can. Now, I had a phone. I was getting my cell phone through one of these knockoff places, and their shtick was that when you call them, somebody picked up the phone, right? And for the 3 or 4 years I had them, they were absolutely right. And whenever you call them, they were tripping. All of a sudden, one day I want to add a line, right? And so of course I call them, and now I can just tell. Finally, I go, by the way, where are you? I'm in the Philippines. Oh, really? Like, you know, probably my fault, maybe not his fault. I can't understand a word the guy said. I call up specifically to add a line, and finally I said, you know, forget it. And I ended up switching places. Now, that was their thing, and I think they probably lost a boatload of people. I don't know about a boatload, but I think it becomes competitive. I guess my question is, I'm stumbling toward, is when you get to be a monopolist, if all of a sudden Commonwealth Edison puts their call center overseas, nobody can understand the guy, why do they give a crap? Well, you can't go anywhere else, right? At some point, the service degrades because they don't care about the service, because they can't, right? at some point, obviously, this advertising company, now that the two of them are together, must think they're big enough that they can do some of this stuff overseas. And yet you would think advertising for a firm, I mean, if PTI had used one of these companies for us, I mean, we'd kind of want our person, wouldn't we? If you laid that person off and gave me a number in India, I wouldn't stay with that place unless all of a sudden I had to, because there weren't many other places. Now, does that just make any sense to you?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I think there are companies who really don't give a crap, and so whatever they can do to cut their costs, they're going to do it. I also think there are companies out there in the world who really do want to be outstanding businesses, and so those are gems when you can find them. Go for it.
Well, I was looking here in the according to AI, India employs 1.1 to 1.3 million people in call centers. That's just in India. He said, more broadly, the call center sector is home to over 13 million people. It's kind of a lot, huh?
Yeah. Is that worldwide, or is that...
Oh, this is just the AI overview, but I mean, I just, you wonder when you have these fights between, I mean, some of it's conservative and liberal, but really isn't. It's people who pay for a lot of education, or think they do through their taxes, and other people that, shall we say, go to schools, or are supposed to be going to schools, and seem to come out of them without a whole lot of skills. And to the point where, I don't know if you were listening when I was talking about my nephew's wife who teaches math in one of the near west suburbs. Yeah, Kevin, she goes, they're moving towards no finals, and if you flunk, you get to come back for 3 days for like a refresher course, and then you get passed, even if there's no test on the refresher course. It just moved people through. I just wonder when you talk about, you know, let's talk about Chicago Public Schools.
What you're saying is schools are a cross-docking operation.
Well, at 10, 15 to 20 grand a year per student, and somebody graduates high school and they're not capable of working in a call center, I think a lot of people have a problem with that. Just saying.
Yeah, we've misused the taxpayers' money, and we haven't done the students any favors.
But somehow or another, people think that that's everything. That's okay. I mean, push them through. Don't flunk anybody. And I'm not. You know, I don't.
Yeah, that's, you know, you get that with the political administrators. You really don't get that with faculty.
No, but I guess some. Why do people? I mean, at some point, you look at your government, wherever it is. Whether you like it here or there, you're criticizing that, criticizing. Somehow, it's reflective of the people who elect people, isn't it? I mean, if all the parents really gave a crap, how could you have that policy? Maybe or don't they? I don't know.
Well, it's also an example of Goodhart's law.
Yeah.
That, you know, when you set up, you have this one target to advance people through school, and so you do what it takes to accomplish that, rather than, you know, the difference, and the subtle difference in that, and Goodhart's law, as we had him on the show once, it really says when a statistic becomes a target, it loses its value as a statistic. And that may seem a little incongruous when you first hear it, but when you think about it, what it's really saying is, if the statistic is important, and in this case it's students advancing through school, then there's two ways you can do it. The wrong way is to say, well, we'll just create this program where they get a little refresher and then we move them along. Or you start looking at the things that influence the ability for students to advance, and that's where you focus your efforts. It really is on doing the right activities rather than getting the right outcome. And if you do the former, do the right activities, you will get the latter.
What some of it, I mean, this, you know, and this is somebody telling me this, a lot of the people in the community that this lady teaches in are Hispanic. And she says that, you know, some of the culture there, not everybody, is they don't really care what the girls learn because they're just supposed to get married.
Well, that's not my experience at all.
No, I'm saying it's not mine either. It's not mine either. But
Big deal. Women, men, doesn't matter. When they go to college, it's a family affair and a big point of pride, and it doesn't matter if it's the young women or the young men.
That's what I... But, I mean, this is grammar school and high school, so maybe it's a little different in some of the areas, but obviously some of the people maybe don't care, or some people maybe don't even speak the language. They don't even know what the kids are doing, it seems. I don't know how that can be, but I tell you, my mother was first generation here, and, man, it was a lot different. Boy, you're going to school, you better do good. That's why you're here. That's why it's America. What's the matter with you?
You would be in awe of my Hispanic students and their level of engagement, their levels of family engagement.
Well, that's been my experience too. So I mean, I guess maybe it's pockets or whatever it is. I don't know, but I mean, it's a stunning to me that we can't have a call center on the South Side when nobody's working. Is it nobody wants to work? Nobody can man it. They're not capable. Nobody can speak the language. I mean, I just look at that. I go, why the hell do we have to do that, Kevin? I mean, some of it's cost, but you know, I don't know if it's all cost. How much do they pay people over there? I have no idea. I mean, how much you pay programmers over there? You probably know.
Much less than you get paid over here.
Carl was saying that every time somebody does it, though, it turns out to be kind of a fiasco. Maybe not every time, but...
Well, it does, because it's really, really hard to manage programmers remotely when you do have language barriers and you do have time zone barriers like that. You know, all of those things are big obstacles. You know, nowadays in the development world, it's all about doing the daily scrum, and that's really hard to do when you go overseas for programmers.
Well, when you see all this stuff happening, Kevin, and we both do, because, I mean, you have to be up on current events just because you like to be anyway, but you're also, in case your students ask you something, you're supposed to know something. You know, and I am, because it does best you can be, because that's what I do for a living. I watch people's portfolios. I'm supposed to know the news, and plus I do the show. But as we've had this massive fight back and forth about tariffs, and it's all on goods, and all of a sudden in the last 3 days I just sort of get inundated with services going overseas, I just wonder if these people actually bring... This one company sends 5,000 people to India or someplace. God's sake, these tariffs, that's like 2 or 3 auto plants coming here, isn't it? That's like a lot. I mean, how much are we gaining or losing, I guess, is my question. And how do we even know?
We only know in the macro sense. Well, you know, we might have some numbers, and because we don't really trust the numbers we get, that's a problem too.
Yeah. Well, what do you think of your buddies here talking about the baseball guys being reinstated, talking about changing?
It's okay to be a stain on the game as long as you're dead.
Well, I guess some of these guys, it is funny, out of the 16 people besides Pete Rose, God, how many of them were from Kennesaw Mountain Landis' reign? That guy was, he must have been an interesting guy to have a beer with, huh?
Yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, but like 12 of them are from the 1921, right?
Yeah, well, we know right off the bat that they took out eight Chicago White Sox, so that's your bunch there.
Here's one guy, Joe. You know who Joe Gideon is? Joe Gideon, well, not a member of the 1919 White Sox. Gideon was banned alongside the players accused of fixing the World Series that year. A friend of Risberg, whoever Risberg was, Gideon allegedly attended a meeting with some of the gamblers who funded the scheme. He originally did not report what he heard, but was banned after testifying in the trial, so evidently when he testified, they found out he knew about it, then they banned the guy.
So see something, say something, goes way back, huh?
Yeah. He died when he was 47 years old. And here's another guy, Gene Paulette. Now, of course, these guys don't have any pensions or anything. Like Gideon, Paulette was not part of the 1919 White Sox and was caught up in the fallout of the scandal. He admitted to taking money from gamblers to lose games while playing for St. Louis in 1919. Paulette played for 6 seasons and blah, blah, blah. All these guys, I mean, remember the, way back, we first started. We wrote the book, The Original Curse. I have it, and I have never read it. The year before, didn't the Bo Sox beat the Cubs in 1918? And this guy's book is all about how that one was rigged before the 1919 one was. And nobody ever caught anybody. Remember that guy being on?
Well, but they know it now, so.
Well, and he wrote the book on it, but none of those guys, I mean, it wasn't a reciprocal ban. So out of all these guys, it looks like maybe only 2 of them are Hall of Fame bound, but they're not going to have a meeting until 2027. That's kind of a ways. The Veterans Committee?
Well, you know, somebody's got to, you know, you got to order the food, you got to get the room, you got to book the hotel. So, you know, there's a lot to do between now and then.
Well, it seems like there's always like 4 or 5 players that are kind of on the bubble in the Hall of Fame as to whether they should be in or not be in. And as they get different stats, there's a few pitchers that are kind of right there. Rick Rushel being one of them, by the way. And who's the other guy that's... And he's been talked about forever, and he's not. And there's a few players, and I'm not so sure, Kevin. In baseball, you know, they think it's somewhat of a... somehow the Hall of Fame thing got to the point where if you didn't play for like 20 years, or if you had war service or something, you're sort of not eligible. Or in football, I mean, I couldn't wait to put Gale Sayers in, because even though he only played 5 years, everybody knew he was a special talent, right? And those kinds of things. I think the baseball thing where they have people that, you know, got injured when they were 33 or 34 or something, I don't know if they shouldn't be in there. What do you think?
Well, a lot of cases, they didn't know it. So the career got shortened because, you know, what now would be Tommy John surgery, a year off, and then back into pitch again. With then, it was just dead arm. And so there were a lot of careers that were shortened with outstanding players that just never got a chance to, you know, to extend their careers.
And there's no, I mean, obviously Carl Yastrzemski's in there, but I actually was reading some, I get a lot of these people in court. They must have nothing better to do. I didn't realize that, but Yastrzemski for 3 years, probably for those 3 years, could have been the best player ever in baseball, war-wise. But before those 3 years and after, he was, 6.5-7 on a 1-10. But for those 3 years where he made all the headlines for himself, he was he was so far ahead of everybody else, it was scary. Even like Williams, in terms of fielding and hitting and stuff. But he had those 3 years that he just was, what was he taking? Those 3 years. I mean, most of these guys are fairly, the guy who was probably the most consistent was Stan Musial, right? When he hit the same on the road as he did at home, he hit the same against lefties. I'm going to make this, I might have already given you a hint, which I shouldn't have. Name the hitting, pitching combo that faced each other the most times in Major League history.
Okay, so Stan Musial and...
Now, wait a minute, I didn't say that, did I? Oh, yeah, I did.
I don't remember which pitcher you mentioned.
I didn't mention the pitcher. I'm getting that out of you.
Oh, so you're supposed to get that out of me. So who did Stan Musial face the most?
Warren Spahn, like 360 times
or something. That makes sense. That makes sense.
They both had a 20-year career that pretty much was the exact same 20 years, right?
Same league, not in the, never on the same team, and both, you know, the Cardinals were really good then, and there was no way on earth that Milwaukee was going to play St. Louis without putting their best pitcher through the rotation that series. Back then, they didn't care about keeping everything in line. You said, if I'm playing one of the good teams, my best pitcher is pitching no matter what.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why Fergie Jenkins always pitched against Bob Gutzman. Right? I mean, but you know what the weird part is? Stan hit 319 against Spahn. All their left-handed hitters were like 240 against the guy. Stan hit the same against everybody. Talk about a model of consistency. The guy must have the same sugar frosted flakes everyone with the same ounces of milk or something.
Well, Billy Williams was the all-time best hitter against Gibson.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he was at least a lefty against the righty. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, well, he, you know.
Oh, and it wasn't that high, you know. It wasn't like he was 350.
What do you say we got a break here? Go back and SPV is up 15. NASDAQ is in on markets on a tear. Thing that, you know, maybe the canary in the coal mine here is these interest rates keep creeping up every day. We'll see how that's going to work. We'll talk about that when we come back. I'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Low and open Stocks and Jocks. Time out. We got Andrew on the board. SP Futures up 13. NASDAQ Futures up 82. We keep, no matter what, there's a bidder under this market. Just keeps driving, driving, driving. I don't know if it's a... if it's the biggest rally ever in a bear market, or if it's a new bull market, or whatever, I guess time will tell. Dow's only up 12. Dow's pretty mixed there. Nothing really going crazy. NVIDIA up 389. NVIDIA was up, in the last 2 days, it's up like 10 bucks. Evidently, somebody worked a deal with the Saudis. They're going to sell all kinds of stuff to the Saudis. Now, I guess if you get on the plane with the president, you do pretty well. The rest of us, you know, maybe we sit at home, but... $10 times 25, 250 billion shares outstanding. It's 225 billion. It's $250 billion in market cap in 2 days. It's like money for nothing and your chicks for free, for sure. We're in Europe. DAX down 73.3%. FTSE up 5, call that flat. CAC around down 36.5%. We're in Asia. The Nikkei down 55. Nikkei's been really volatile. That's like the calmest day they've had in a while. So I'm going to say that's almost flat, 0.1%. Hang Seng, however, up 5.32. That's over 2%. Shanghai up 29.8. I don't know, China, I think, made some deal with Brazil yesterday or something. But China's been bouncing back here pretty heavy since this deal was made. I don't know the whole details of it. I don't think anybody does. But down from 100 and some percent to like 30, so that's a long way down. But the bonds are actually... interest rates are down a little bit today, down 3 basis points, 4.46. The Bund unchanged at 2.67. Yesterday, the 30-year closed at 4.94, which is the highest it's been in a long time. The mortgage rates have shot up this week, which Nancy talked about on Monday. That's not good for that industry. Oil, down 76 cents, 62.91. Again, $7 off the low print a week ago Monday. Brent down 74 cents, 65.89. Natural gas down 8 cents. 355 gold, which has been getting clobbered, down another $5 today, 32.42. China was the one that was kind of allegedly hoarding the gold. Now maybe they aren't as much, so gold's trying to turn the other way. Copper down 3 cents, 4.69. Foreign exchange, this has been all over the place. Now the dollar's on the losing side after having the huge uptick after the tariff announcement the other day. The euro's back up to 112. It was over 113 for a while, back down to 111 something, now back to 112. But 1% moves every couple days in currency is not healthy. They should be fairly steady, and they're just not. British pound is back up to 133.3. That's a pretty big move today. That's a quarter of a percent move in 1 day. Crypto. Bitcoin's down 775, but still a high price of 103.937. Yeah, what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports? Cubs win.
Yes, they do. It is May 14th here in Chicago, 6:38. Cubs won with a little bit of a late game comeback, bringing it all the way to the ninth inning, ending their game against the Marlins 5-4. And over in Chicago weather, it's currently 58 degrees. It's currently going to be a little bit of clouds, maybe a little bit of showers throughout the day. We're going to have a high of 67. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 67 degrees. They're going to have some pretty sunny, clear skies. They're going to have a high of 85. And finally, for Chicago traffic, there are no major accidents to report. If you're on the outbound, look out. That's where things are a bit heavier. Look out on the outbound Kennedy from the Jane Byrne to O'Hare is going to take you about 40 minutes. And the outbound Edens from Jane Byrne to Deerfield is going to take you about 47 minutes. That's all I got. Back to you, Chief.
Kevin, what do you make of the Boston series with the Knicks? Boy, I don't know, that Jason Tatum, poor guy, tore his Achilles. He already had surgery.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of sucks, huh?
Well, taking your best player off of your team is not a good thing, especially come playoff time.
Is Curry going to play tonight? If not, I think those guys might be toast.
Yeah, they might be. I'm guessing he will be because they need him to be. He'll at least try.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty tough to play basketball with a tricky hamstring. Well, it's pretty tough to play any sport at that level if you're hurting at all. I mean,
yeah, but never rule out an old man of stature like that. You know, there's always that one hurrah in there.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was looking at, I was digging around, I've been kind of jousting this week about the size of this tax increase with the tariffs, and I went back and did some research here, Kevin. It's pretty interesting, and the largest tax increases in U.S. history. By the way, none of them are close to this, but I mean, what's the biggest one in terms of current dollars, would you say? You'll probably get this.
No, I won't.
Obama won for Obamacare. What do they call it? The ACA, the American Care Act, or whatever that was? It was $76.8 billion.
The Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, Affordable Care Act. There was a... What was that? I know they put taxes in on that. I forget what the hell they were. Do you remember? But it was $76 billion in the first year. In 1993, Clinton put something through. It was $65 billion. The Clinton administration put something through. Congress put it out there. But the biggest one, and it's one that really everybody forgets about, is Ronald Reagan, in terms of constant dollars, the single biggest tax increase up till now was his 82 tax increase. And everybody thinks of Reagan as the big tax cutter guy. Was he a net positive?
On net, he did. They just had to put some back because they kind of overplayed their hand.
Was the tax decrease more than $85 billion? I don't think it was. I thought they were like about even at the end of the day. Because one was on higher levels for corporations and people, and the other was regressive where they increased the unemployment and all the other stuff, right?
Well, the other big thing they did was they removed your ability to deduct interest expense for anything except your mortgage.
That's right. And businesses still get to.
You know, people were were financing cars and getting tax deductible for the interest rate on the car. Your credit cards weren't quite such a thing then, but you might have a store credit card.
Yeah, you wonder how that. It's not up to me to do people's legal work for them, but it's sort of stunning to me, Kevin, how every man, when I say teaching, you're in the teaching thing, and I think you guys are teaching a lot of stuff that people sure need to know. But personal finance, not that I'm rich or anything, but personal finance, I could, without being an attorney, I could talk to people for hours on the subject. How many people do you know that are electricians and plumbers and have jobs like that that don't incorporate themselves and don't have an LLC or something like that, or even a partnership where they can deduct their expenses, like their hospitalization and stuff? I'm going to say some huge percentage that pays that after tax instead of before tax. And you wonder why. There's people in my building here that, engineers and so forth, that they have to pay for their own hospitalization, and they do a lot of work on the side, and they just write the check out to them. And say, why aren't you, Joe Jamoke Inc., and you can pay your income tax or your hospitalization there? Oh, I don't know anything about that. Isn't it scary?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't frighten so easily.
But I mean, it's the how many people in the country pay taxes and don't just even do the simple things to lower their bill? I mean, the tax stuff has always been kind of a weird thing. I mean, it's been so long, but when I first got out of school, I would do some taxes for people. Remember those things they send out to you, Kevin? this disappoints about showing our age. They would actually send you a thing in the mail to do your taxes for next year. And in there were all the tables. The thing was what?
1030 booklet, yep.
Yeah, it was like 40 pages long, 30 pages long. All the different tables, all the different everything. And then the taxes. By the way, did you notice that the Congress is working on the extending the new tax thing? And I think they're raising, I thought I heard yesterday, Kevin, the $10,000 you can deduct in other taxes. I think that's going to 30. Might even be more. So that would be pretty good, I think.
It's going up. I know it's going up.
Yeah, it's going up. But they used to have, it was so, I use the term anal. If you made like 18 grand a year, which, you know, is what a lot of people made in those days, there was a table. If you made between like 17.5 and 18.5, you got to deduct, you know, $400 for sales tax if your state sales tax rate was like 9. And if it was 8, you got to deduct like 360. All of it was in this booklet. But the weird part, I think if you went out and bought a car, you got to add that to it, right? If there was some big purchase.
Well, yeah, you actually had to have the documentation for it, but yes, you could add that to it.
So you could take your $400, but then if you've had to pay,
you had your deduction for normal living, groceries and things like that, and then if you had an extraordinary expense like a new car, you could add that on there.
But I think all the different tax laws we've had passed since then, you know, what's kind of a constant, Kevin, and every time, it doesn't matter if it's Democrat or Republican. Every time they get rid of some of the deductions, and then maybe they lower the rate, because I think that's kind of what the Reagan did and a few people did. But then the next guy, when he raises the rate back up, you think you're back to the same place, but you're not. You're worse, right?
Yeah, because they got rid of the deductions.
They got rid of the deductions. So when you say, you know, the top end used to be 50% and now it's 30-something, for a lot of people it sounds so much better. But if you put all those deductions back in, it might not be that much better, right? If you could deduct your interest and all the other stuff. I mean, how many people, God's sake, if you go out and buy a car now for 80 grand and you're on the 7-year payment plan, what's the interest on that? It's like buying a house, for God's sake.
Well, it's probably higher than a house.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying, I mean, you and I were alive when you could buy a house for 100 grand, right?
Yep, or less.
Or less. There was always. So what do you think of, you know, without getting any kind of a crazy discussion, are the country, are some of these companies being, I'll use the term, favored? I mean, Tesla's up like $110 in the last month. It's not, the last earnings were terrible, Kevin. Is it, you know, we're going to get, are the companies that are that big now, are they just going to have so much favored status that there's no stopping them? I think the answer might be yes.
Well, it might be, but you're also seeing this on the tour now, that the entourage of tech execs, and, you know, there's all the ones we recognize, but there's a whole bunch that we don't.
Yep.
That are on there. I think people are starting to rally around some of these, thinking there's going to be a lot of investment coming into them, and they may be right. I think that's a part of the equation as well. We're just looking at a sector.
Well, what I don't want to get there, and I'm sort of sensing it, boy, I hope I'm wrong, is that these big guys that are flying around on the right jet are going to end up with all the largesse, and all the rest of us are going to get is a tax increase. I mean, we're talking about the biggest tax increase on record was $77 billion. If the estimates are correct on these tariffs, we're talking $500 billion. That's something we've never seen before. I don't think it's going to be that high, Kevin, but at the end of the day, but what was April's number, 16.7? And it was only good for a couple of weeks. So we could get a 30 or 35 in May, multiply that by 12, you're getting there, right?
And it'd be interesting to see how all of this translates to prices, because as I've told you offline, I don't believe it's going to be one-to-one.
Oh, no, it won't be one-to-one. Matter of fact, did you... I don't know if he sent it to everybody. He sent it to me yesterday. But Hal did a, Hal's pretty good at this when it comes to the math. The principle of it is you drop a simple tariff. You drop a 10% tariff on something. Sometimes the person who's exporting the stuff to us is going to drop their price a little bit so they can remain somewhat competitive. So you're going to get something like that. Now, the flip side of that is the person here who's the competitor might raise their prices now because they can. You know, we hope they're philanthropic and don't do that, but I wouldn't count on any of these guys to be philanthropic. So Hal actually went through, I don't know how he got the data, but he came back and said if you have a 10% tariff, I think he said, I was looking at it, the number probably ends up around 8.2, which is kind of exactly where I would have put it, just off the top of my head, Kevin. It won't be 10, but it's not going to be nothing. But you got to factor in the price from our end. And I wrote Hal back on that, and of course, he writes back like, nobody will ever do that. I go, what are you talking about? I mean, I think with some of the things, I've always got an old truck around, so I'm always buying stuff. And if you need a new taillight or something, it's amazingly not that expensive if you go into, you know, A1 Auto Parts and all these people that are online. You can order a new taillight for like, 2000 Chevy or something. They're like $25, $30. And they're reasonably well. They're good. They come with the bulbs in them and everything. Yeah, but if you go to GM, you might be talking 90 or 100. It's a massive difference. So if all of a sudden, the one coming from China wouldn't fit at 100% tariff on it, but I don't know that if there's somebody in this country who's also making these things, which I don't even think they are, that's not GM, I'm not so sure if the one from China doubles, if they're not going to raise theirs. I mean, it's not like, Ford can go out and say all they want about employee pricing, but if all of a sudden every foreign car they compete against is up 50%, which I don't think it's going to be, because we're settling in and we're at 10 or 20 or 30. First of all, the demand for them is going to drive them up. They're going to drive the price up naturally, right? That's even if they want to be philanthropic. So I mean, there's way a lot of things moving in this whole field here that doesn't really get explained all that much, and you really don't know where it's all going to land. But one thing's for sure, the government gets their check. That's for sure. Now, whether you end up only having to pay 8% more and a 10% tariff, that I'll buy. If I would have said 7.5, I'd have bought that too. It's somewhere under 10, I think, but it's not zero. And the government gets their 10. It's a question of how much somebody else eats out of the 10, right?
Yeah, you have to pay attention for the companies that are playing the share game rather than price max. Those are the ones that are going to really thrive on it, because good strategists understand the value of market share, and you don't get market share by squeezing the last dime out of the price.
On the tariffs, just as I'm beating up on this tax issue, if you just take the tariffs on automobiles, nothing else, at the stated rate, 10%, it's higher than the entire Obama tax increase. It's $100 billion. That's a lot. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder how much people's ability to pay. I asked Audrey the other day, and Audrey's bright girl, and she's really good with numbers. She's been broke on the floor back before you had calculators. And I said, Audrey, when you sell a house to somebody and Nancy gets a mortgage, and Nancy does a great job at that, and you put somebody in the place, the assumption is, still with Americans, although these young people don't have this assumption as much, Kevin, is every year is going to be better than the year before. And I'm going to make more next year than I make this year and the year after that. But I said, oh, if you actually took a house, a nice-sized house, not a shack, but not a mansion either, I said, if you were to sit down and say to somebody, scout out your next 7 years, 8 years, or 10, and in terms of what you think your maintenance is. Well, if the house is 20 years old, you're sitting there going, wait, how old is that air conditioner? How old is the heater? Running pretty good now. What about the roof? What about the windows? What about the sliding door? Which I don't think anybody, including me, and I'm reasonably close to some of this stuff, is able to put down a budget for the next 7 years and have any idea of the prices I'm going to have to pay. Because if you did, I don't know if you'd buy the place. And most people think, sliding door, what could that be, $500? Careful on that. But a nice sliding door might be, what, $5,000?
I'll add to that that even if you do a good job of budgeting for it, you're still going to be wrong.
Yeah, I think the interesting, the inflation that people don't even feel yet. Hey, did you listen yesterday when I was talking about the guy at Northwestern who was trying to get the lung transplant?
I'm sure I did.
But it was
sure.
Turns out the insurance company now is going to pay for it. The quick story is, Northwestern appears to be having some luck at lung transplants and even double lung transplants for some kinds of lung cancer that they must know that has not metastasized, hasn't spread. Now, whether it's a certain kind, they know. I'm not the doctor, but they've had some pretty good luck with these lung transplants, and they haven't been doing them that long, but people seem to be doing pretty good with them. I don't know how many they've done, but and how many other hospitals are doing it. But this guy, whoever this guy is, needs a double lung transplant. And evidently they found a donor, and Northwestern wants $1.5 million from the insurance company. And the insurance company first said no, and people were, bitching at the insurance company, and I think there might have been a GoFundMe page, I don't know. And I'm just sitting there, Kevin, how the bleep did they come up with $1.5 million for that? I mean, if you've got 10 guys in the operating room for 20 hours and you paid them a whole week salary, you don't come up to $1.5 million, do you? I mean, do they just throw whatever number they want in it or what?
I think so. It's not rational.
I mean, how does I'm not accusing the current administration for not fixing this in 100 days because nobody else has. How do you even start the fix? I mean, I know Carl's always talking about, well, put 5 people in jail and they'll send an example. I don't know if that works either. And I don't know what the solution here is. You know, Trump just came out and he identified the drug price thing, which is sort of the same thing Biden did 2.5-3 years ago, identified it, made a big speech about it, and here it is 3 years later and nothing's done. And now Trump's going to try and address it, which I sure as hell hope he does. I don't know what the solution is, Kevin. I honestly don't. Unless you do something with the patent laws, unless you do some sort of I hate like saying regulation because regulation goes the wrong way all the time. Somehow, someplace, you've got to say you can't charge $1,000 or something that costs you $2 to make. And I don't know how you do that with the current patent laws and everything.
The one thing I'm getting out of it is he's saying you can't charge, $500,000 for something they can get for $10,000 in Europe. So that's a start.
Well, it is and it isn't. What if they just raise it in Europe?
Well, they may, except that there's a lot of price controls in Europe, so they'd have to get that by the governments. But I think that's the other side of it is you may drive up prices in Europe some, but you may also bring them down in the U.S.
Well, Europe, I
certainly think the contrast is worth noting because if the same company can make money selling. Selling for less in Europe, then they're just gouging the United States. They're just gouging people here.
But this is not a flash from this administration. I mean, if you want the fatso drug, in the fine print and every one of the commercials, and if every ad they have and everything, you pick up something and there'll be an ad in there for one of the weight loss drugs. On the bottom of it, they all say, "Oh, by the way, if you can't afford it, if you don't have insurance, contact us and we'll help you." Well, they're going to give it to you cheaper. Well, obviously, they're making money at that. I guess that's technically illegal under Robinson-Patman Act too. But
most people think they're trying to stay out of court doing that.
Yeah, they're saying, well, okay, so instead of $1,000, they'll give it to you for $400. Well, they're making money at $400. I guess the thing with Europe is I think their patent's actually longer, isn't it? Boy, we need an expert on this. But they have price controls on them. They ask the guy, and it's weird, Kevin. I watch our people in office. Every time, it's not happens all the time, but it doesn't happen very often. But The drug company guy in there will be bitching at him about the price of drugs. I've never heard one guy from either side of the aisle, hey, Kevin, that Ozempic you're selling for $1,000, what does it actually cost you to make? I've never once heard anybody ask that question. That'd be the first question I'd ask.
No, they'll start tap-dancing about R&D costs, funding R&D for other drugs.
Okay, they'll tap-dance on it, but I guess I'll keep asking them until my time is up. I mean, plus they got to pay a salary too, right? That's part of the R&D. Just saying.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think we need to, before we have all kinds of dictums and all kinds of stuff, I think we need to, you know, even though you and I fight about everything, I think we have one thing that's seriously in common. You take the world's simplest case and you solve that, and all the complicated cases seem to go away, don't they? Or can go away.
Well, you can always manage the one-offs, too, as well.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, and I always go back to the polio example, and I would guess, I don't know how much, you know, your dad was making in 1955 or something, but I think mine was making $2,500 as a policeman, maybe not even that much, in the city of Chicago. And I'm guessing he would have popped the whole year's pay for a polio shot for me, because the thought of somebody having polio with the iron in the lungs and all that stuff was just too horrific to even imagine. I know people now don't even know how iron in the lung is. Those are people that can't, their muscles are, they can't breathe, the lungs, the things got to breathe for them. It's, you know, but how much, now if for that polio shot, you and I had to wrestle a molar out of an alligator in the Nile or someplace, maybe it actually would cost you $2,500. But if it costs you $2, what's the number? How much can you make? How much do you deserve? And I don't want to hear any BS about, you know, what about funding my R&D for the next 40 years? How much does it cost? You deserve a tremendous profit. The question is how much? It can't be whatever you get from people, right? I mean, and yet you don't want it so regulated that nobody wants to R&D anything either. But therein lies the question. If you can't answer the question for one drug, how are you going to answer it for 100 drugs, right? In my opinion.
Well, I think it really, if you shorten the patent protection, you'll go a long way towards a helping situation.
But what if you shorten polio to 4 years? My dad still would have paid a whole year's pay. At some point, there's, I mean, you know, it's happened in railroads. Okay, you got a railroad running next to somebody's farm. You know, how much to strip my corn? How much you got? When you give somebody a monopoly, I think you have to ask the question, how much you're going to charge, don't you? We don't. It appears.
Well, all right, Tom, I have to go.
What are you doing? What's up today? What do you got going?
Hang out with a bunch of seventh graders today.
Well, good for you. These guys, these are guys now in seventh grade. You guys are doing the high school stuff for credit for college, right?
Yeah, these are people just coming to do career exploration, you know, and they just bus them in waves. This is at the RV Hall of Fame.
Oh, cool! I bet that'll be fun.
Yeah,
you guys got a booth or something like?
Yeah, we got tables there.
All right, good for you. Have a nice day. Weather should be nice.
Supply chain people. I teach them the supply chain for Hershey's chocolate, and I have chocolate bars there. And for the IT people, we cover the Grand Theft Auto hack.
Hey, what do you? Quick question: Why do people from Europe won't touch a Hershey's bar? They claim American chocolate is garbage. What do we do to it here that they don't like?
I don't know, but don't mess with my presentation. Don't crap on my presentation here.
Yeah, don't get in his head right now. He's under a lot of pressure. Seventh graders are tough.
Yeah, they are. They're
Kevin
a challenge.
Can handle.
Junior high kids, they scared me when I was like in grade school. They scared me when I was in junior high, and they still scare the crap out of me.
All right. Well, boys, on that note, I'll turn it over to you guys.
All right.
Yeah, go get them, Kevin.
Hey, Russell, before I go any further, I got a question I got to ask you. Because I was on this national podcast yesterday, and the question was, if somebody wanted to learn options from day one right now, what is the best book on the market? And I said, I will ask Russell, because Russell has the best VIX book on the market.
Now, see, I don't really think that if you want to learn options, that the very first thing is a book.
Okay.
There are a handful of, you know, it, there are a handful of brokerage firms that have really nice intro to option, you know, lessons, etc., that you can go through. The OIC does, I think the OIC does a really good job.
That's what I said.
Which is not CBOE's. It's the OIC is the industry one for all of the exchanges.
Okay.
I was at the Options Institute. This is the Options Industry Council. But I think for the absolute basics, they that's, you know, from step one, that's the very first place to go. Is you know, this comes from somebody that has written a handful of books. Don't go buy a book to start out.
Is I mentioned the. Is the Options Institute still around? I mentioned them in the CBOE site.
They are, but the Options Institute is more about what they've been doing lately is not necessarily geared towards starting out.
Okay.
And I've always felt that even when I was at the Options Institute, I always felt like for the very 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 beginner stuff, the OIC. You know, one of the things with the Options Institute is it's CBOE centric, and so there's an awful lot about, you know, SPX, Russell 2000, and VIX in the curriculum that they have. But OIC is very agnostic with respect to what you trade.
Does the CBOE still have the God, it's how long ago these were in there when I was the marketing chairman? Does the CBOE still have the individual 3 and 4 page things on a covered right, a protective put?
No, I don't think so.
Because those are really good on individual strategies.
I think they were too. I mean, I wrote some of them.
Well, there you go.
So I thought they were pretty good.
Well, I mean, it's...
yes, they were excellent. No, I and actually, it's kind of comical. There's a we without naming firm names. My wife has her IRA with one of the bigger, well-known brokerage firms. It's been around forever, and periodically they get a new person that's kind of like her rep, and they'll call up and say, "Have you ever considered using options?" I think it's one of the things they have to do. "You ever considered using options in your portfolio?" And we've got this whole series of videos and blah 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 that could help you learn about. They could help you learn about that and start using options in your portfolio. And I wrote all of that material.
Really? Did you ever?
It's just kind of funny. And after about the fourth or fifth time that this happened, she said, I want you to Google this guy's name. that's my husband. If I want to do options, I'm okay."
Did you ever, I don't know if you're old enough, did you ever? I mean, when I learned a lot at the University of Chicago, those guys, I mean, I had a class from Hans Stoll, and those were the guys that did a lot of stuff for the exchanges back then. Yeah, but when you came here, you watched the Marty O'Connell tapes. You ever hear of those?
Yeah.
And you sat in a dark room, and you got the videotape or the 8-track, not the 8-track, the whatever the thing was,
VHS. Betamax. Yeah. Oh, let's say Betamax.
Yeah, and you stuck it in there, and it was boring as all get out. But I always took really good notes. I think I still have them somewhere because you never want to have to take the thing again in the darkened room when it's 100 degrees in there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you learn, you know, all about like the floor trading and different ways to value stuff that like nobody talks about today. And how to do how to value the reversals and the conversions and things like that, which you needed as a floor trader because you didn't have any other help. So, when you didn't, the OEX was different because there was all kinds of different strikes and a lot of stuff in the book. But if you were a regular floor trader and a retail person, can't do this. If you were to, you have a stock, okay, say you got IBM, and you're sitting there going, okay, IBM is, what the hell is it, 258. Somebody were to say, what are the 60 calls worth? If you're a decent crowd trader, if the put was $5, they'll tell you instantly where the call's worth.
Yeah, you can back into it.
Yeah, you back into it. Yeah. Or your butterfly, or depends on what trade. Now, some crowds, the puts didn't trade enough to trade the reversal conversions. Now, Dr. J was a reversal conversion trader because he traded in IBM, and IBM enough puts traded where you could do that. Some pits, there'd be, you know, 300 calls to trade a day and 20 puts. So you could never get the other side. Those guys were they might have been butterfly traders or something like that. So you had to have something to pin your stuff together when you were trading, because it was otherwise you couldn't do it. You had to figure out a way to price the stuff. You always knew what the butterfly was worth. You always knew what the reverse conversion was worth. And I wonder if these interest rates keep creeping up here, and you know they've got up here before and going right back down. But if they do, if all of a sudden I was on a national podcast with Joel yesterday, and he was asking me about all the Greeks. You know, Russell, I feel so comfortable doing this show with you guys because I've talked to so many of the people who listen that I have a pretty good feel for what level they want me at. And they actually want me to go high up the statistics chain and talk some stuff with Hal. Not a huge dose of it, but once in a while. Because they'll say, even some of the ladies in Arizona and Philadelphia here from time to time, they said, don't dumb it down. That's why we listen. If we don't understand, we'll catch it the next time. But, you know, don't do the whole show like that. But once in a while, we want you to go up, you know, the education chain with somebody like you or Hal. And that's why we listen. We don't want it to be dumbed down, but then again, we don't want the whole show like that. But I have no feel. So Joel asked me, well, you know, what about all the Greeks? And I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, if I start talking about Greeks here without explaining even the option model, you know, I'm kind of stumbling around going, I have no idea where to enter, you know, when you don't have a feel for the people. It's kind of weird.
Well, my first response is always, when you're talking about that, are you got me here?
Yep.
Oh, my phone was doing something funny. I always say that the Greeks are not the first thing that you need to be teaching at all. In fact, there are a good portion of option traders that don't even need to know the Greeks. What you need to know is you know, what do you think is going to happen with the stock or the underlying, and how long, you know, and what's your time frame on that, and then figure out if you think that premium makes sense.
Well, I was,
and that even goes to the point of, you know, we talk about, because these are numbers that we do talk about on this show, you know, talk about what the straddle was pricing in for a stock in front of earnings. Well, you know, if you think, you know, that a stock's going to move more than 5% tomorrow off of earnings, and the straddle's priced at 3%, you've got a price target and you've got timing.
Yeah, well, I talked a little bit about
That sounds like a pretty complex trade to a lot of individuals, until you know get in and explain exactly what you're talking about here. So that's what I say with respect to the Greeks is you need to have an understanding of, like, you know, I'll explain implied volatility, and that sometimes, you know, you might buy an option and, you know, you might buy a call option, the stock goes down a little bit, but the call premium went up. Well, that's an indication that there were more buyers of the option, you know, more buying pressure on the option after you were in there, et cetera. I'll talk about that. But as far as, you know, deep dive into understanding the option Greeks, I don't really think that, that's necessary for individuals. And I'll give you a danger of an option Greek that drives me absolutely freaking bonkers, which is when people talk about delta being the odds of your trade working out.
I talked about that yesterday. That's not what I said delta is.
That's not what delta is. I mean, people use it as, you know, the price change part, but then also you'll hear guys talk about, you know, you bought this call option, it's got a delta of 50, so there's a 50% chance you're going to make money and 50% chance you're going to lose money. That's just not right.
I've heard people say it's a 50% chance it lands in the money. I've heard that definition before. That's a little wobbly too, actually.
Yeah,
it's a little better, but it's still kind of wobbly.
Yeah, and it's not. You shouldn't be judging your trades off of. That's what it is. Is that's the market's opinion right now, of you know, the 50-50 chance of where if the option's going to land in the money. It's not the reality of it, you know. Right. It's just, and if you've got a, and the way you make money in the markets you know, the way you make the big money, not necessarily the long-term and, you know, good, steady investment money, but, you know, the big money, is you have to have an opinion different than the market.
Well, how do you, without launching into some huge political discussion, in the last couple of weeks, we've seen things happen that obviously are affecting the market in dramatic ways, to the point where it's to me, it's almost otherworldly. I mean, if you were to talk to some drone at the University of Chicago talking about option pricing and the flow of information, I don't think in their lifetime would they have imagined the last 3 weeks. You know, where you see a Tesla coming at, it's trading 230 or 220, and now it's 344, and it's almost all to do with perceived or not perceived or whatever favoritism by an administration or by stockholders or whoever. I mean, it's not even anywhere near the information that you and I would have thought would anybody have. This NVIDIA is up $250 billion in market cap because the guy was on a plane with Trump and allegedly sold all these things to the Saudis. Now, since when are the Saudis our best buddies? And how do we know they're not going to turn around and ship them at a bigger price over to China? I wouldn't trust them as far as I could throw them, would you? I mean, that's just me.
No.
So, when we're talking on, we have a governor, this is not all anti-Republican or whatever, we have a governor in Illinois that just increased their gas taxes again to where this is gas taxes on your, when you buy a gallon of gas, and to where we're second in the country only to the hated California. Yet the guy who's supposedly so brilliant cannot find a way to tax somebody with an electric car for driving over the same roadway in a car that's heavier than mine. Well, I got a problem with that. I mean, but why have they decided that electric cars get a pass? Does he own one? I mean, Indiana and other places have found...
You know, the electric car getting a pass thing, that's, you know, the whole... they're better for the environment, et cetera. So we got to offer up incentives to which everybody's starting to learn they're not necessarily better for the environment.
Well, but they're also my gas tax is to repair the pothole and repair the bridge, correct?
Yeah.
Well, they're heavier than mine.
Yeah.
I mean, there is some logic.
Oh, I know. No, yeah. I drove down to an investment conference with a couple of people, and we had this discussion yesterday about just because we were on I-65, and we were talking about, you know, I was just explaining how the electric cars, you know, do more damage to the expressway, and I go and then I, you know, I'm being all sneaky and everything. I said, and you know how we pay for the expressways, right? Gas taxes. So these guys are tearing it up, and they're not paying for it.
I actually think in Indiana,
they just left it there.
You know what though? Yeah. I think Russell, in Indiana, they do tax them.
Do they tax the? There's not a gas tax.
No, but they find a way to do it. I don't know what it is. Whether it's there's a special fee.
Well, but the expressways are you know, and I don't know where they raise the money from, but the expressways are mostly maintained by the federal government.
Okay. Well, okay. Yeah, then,
except when you get into tollways and all of that other kind of
all
stuff.
All right, so the federal government uses the gas tax as well. So they should find a way. I mean, this is, to me, I don't know who does it, but the average person, let's say, be easy, the average person... Mm-hmm. drives 20,000 miles a year, which is probably a little high, and the average car gets 20 miles per gallon. That's 1,000 gallons of gas. The tax in Illinois is 94 cents. By the time you pay sales tax,
$940 a year to drive around?
To drive around. So if you got an electric car, unless you can tell me you only drove something, I want $900. Why wouldn't I?
Well, they have talked there in Europe. And I don't know if they actually do this now, but I know that there has been discussion around and conservatives get all up in arms about this one. But I kind of understand it. Their discussion of taxing you per mile, which makes a lot of sense.
Well, but they are.
You know, I was pre-electric cars. I always felt like the gas tax was one of the fairest taxes we had.
Well, it.
Because you know, you're basically taxing the person that's using, you know, the way you were taxing the heck out of truckers, but you were taxing the people that got the best benefit from the roads.
Well, I mean,
because they had driven the most miles.
If, like, for instance, it's fair in some ways.
Yeah.
My suburban was very heavy. I got 12 miles at a gallon, maybe.
Exactly.
And now this truck I have now is a lot lighter, and I get 16, 17. So I pay less, but I'm doing less damage. So there's a fairness to that, right?
Yeah.
And, you know,
there's an environmental part of it as well, because if, you know, if I buy a car that gets 50 miles to the gallon, actually, I drive a behemoth, and the professor that I split the driving duties with drives a smaller Toyota SUV, and because of mileage and cost for the premium gas, when she fills up, it's about 40% of when I get gas. I shouldn't say fills up. I should say we stop at the same spots each time.
Okay.
So when we top off, it'll be about $50 for me, and it's about $22 or $23 for her.
Well,
that's a tax that actually, if that actually helps the environment, because if you're very, if you're very cost conscious, you'll want to buy a car that gets really nice miles a gallon.
Well, I mean, it's
very fuel efficient, but
I don't want
now that model is just all messed up with electric cars, and we do need to. Not just the millionaires and billionaires, the electric car owners need to pay their fair share.
Well, I mean, look at how many people bought real expensive stuff through Amazon before they paid sales taxes. They never went after any of those people either. Was it Pritzker's wife that bought all the stuff, or what? I mean,
she probably has a really nice allowance.
Yeah, I mean, I used to think that, you know, this lack of fairness was just an oversight. It's not. I did some work. I've been fighting with some of the people on the show regarding this tariff, you're closer to young people than I am, because obviously you teach them every day. I'm very, very concerned about the U.S. of A. that I know, or at least thought I knew, although it sure seems that several administrations, this one probably the worst. Every modicum of decency, or gentlemen's agreement, gentlewomen's agreements, that I thought people in Washington, at least some any morality they may have had, it appears there's really none of it written down. They can do whatever they damn well please, and there's never a check or balance anywhere on anything. And this thing, and how you can blow it by your population, I honestly, it's not my job. It's Congress's job or somebody's job to talk about taxes. I mean, you need taxes so you can pay for aircraft carriage and stuff. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that an administration, and because they seem to have the sway over an awful lot of people here who don't seem to be able to think on their own, I went through, because I was fighting with Hal and a few other people about this tariff and the size of the tax increase. And you can say all you want about, oh, don't worry, it'll come back in jobs, but that's bull bleep. It may come back, it may do something. The fact is, you and I are paying taxes this month that we didn't pay last month, and there's a piece of paper someplace that says Constitution on there. It says all revenue bills should start in the House. House didn't do anything about this, so I went back.
Yeah.
I went back and I looked at the biggest tax increases by these guys' estimates, which I think is high. They're talking $500 to $600 billion this year in tariffs. It's more than the entire corporate tax. You know what? Before today, the single biggest tax increase in today's dollars was the Affordable Care Act, $76.8 billion. These guys are talking six times that, 6 to 7 times that, and it wasn't passed by Congress. Mm-hmm. And everybody I talk to says, what's the problem? Why don't we just throw the Constitution out, Russell? I mean, are we there? Or what?
Well, can Congress not act?
But you shouldn't be able to do it. because it's a revenue bill. It's a revenue thing.
Well, can Congress not step up and say, "Hey, dude"?
I think the law. I think the law that he's using, and I don't know, is some sort of a, you know, some sort of a thing where we're actually at war or something.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. That there's that some of the powers that he's using haven't been invoked. You know, but the last time it was invoked was 1812 over something, and then during the financial crisis, or not the Great Depression. You know, the only time that they've done things like this have been like that. Well, you say the checks and, you know, there are supposed to be checks and balances in place.
Congress has.
I don't have an answer to this question, but.
Well, they've seated. There are court cases.
Shouldn't Congress they act?
Well, it's a mishmash because Congress has ceded some tariff authority to the president. Where if somebody throws a tariff on us, he can react right away. Mm-hmm. And so he gets to do that. But he just basically accused everybody of screwing us. And saying, "Oh, I'm putting a tariff on everybody because they're all screwing us." And I don't think that the courts that upheld the president's right to do this in those two court cases ever conceived of this sort of deal. You know what? In terms of 2009 dollars, guess what the biggest tax increase ever was?
What?
Your buddy Dutch, $85.3 billion in 1982. The great tax lower, Ronald Reagan. Put through the biggest tax increase ever up until today. How many people know that?
I was not aware of that. I'm kind of surprised at that. It was 83, so 3 years into his administration?
No, he passed his big income tax cut. And all these estimates. And within like a year, year and a half, Congress was absolutely appalled at how much the revenues had dropped. So they went back and they increased really all the.
We got to get something back.
They went back and increased like all the payroll taxes. I think it was Social Security and Medicare and that kind of stuff. So they essentially left the corporate tax drop, which you know was too high, and went back and decided sort of like this guy's doing. His intention is to cut corporate and high end income taxes, or leave them where the cuts were last time, and fill it up with. I mean, just ask your wife or anybody you know that has a brain cell working. If anybody had decided to increase our taxes by $500 billion and said, we're going to have a sales tax do that, or we're going to have income taxes do that, or we're going to have Social Security taxes do that, the backlash would be something you didn't want to hear, right? Yet, By doing it with tariffs and telling you're really screwing China and not you, and have people stupid enough to believe that, stupid's probably too long, hard of a word, it's genius on their part. It's genius. They could never have gotten away with it any other way. But how many people paying these taxes are going to be happy to do it because they're screwing China?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see when it actually starts to impact people what their response is to it.
Yeah,
because you know it's not, and that's probably why you don't have a whole lot of people upset about tariffs. I think a lot of the I just hate Trump protesters don't understand the tariff thing at all, because you don't really hear them bitching about it.
Well, yeah, I mean everybody, yeah. It's stunning,
but it's also not it. You know we're not the we don't have. Have quite the attention span that we really should.
I would agree. You
know, and until something hits us right in the face, we don't realize how bad the situation is. So when it starts to impact people in the near future, and impact them majorly in a negative way, this is what'll happen. If this stuff really starts to hit people in a very negative way, there'll be this gigantic wave of there'll be a blue wave that pushes back against Trump, and all the stuff will pretty much go away. So it'll be it will be interesting to see how the next the next few months play out, and then basically in about 10 or 11 months we're in election season for the midterms. How's that going to work? And if you're truly, that's what a lot of Democrats are saying, if you're truly upset about this situation, we've got to take Congress back. And that, when that happens, there'll be a whole lot of pushback on Trump and a lot of the stuff will get negated. If I were a country that this was having a negative impact to get, and I were not a friend of the United States, I'd try to play the long game, because you've only got about 18 months or so left. 19 months left, where Trump's probably not going to be checked by, not be checked by a Congress that will probably, the first day they show up, introduce articles of impeachment.
Yeah, I don't want to go down that road.
I've seen town halls with Democrats where they're like, "Why aren't you doing anything? Why aren't you doing anything about this?" And one guy, I think he was out in Washington State, he said, It was a Democrat from Georgia. He basically said, "I understand, but you have to understand the tools that I have at our discretion right now. We're the minority party. We without getting people on the other side to join us, we really can't pass anything right now. So, we're there with you. You've just got to make us the majority party again in Congress." So that that's how everything will play out.
Well, my concern on all that is,
outside of it, if all of a sudden we've got an agreement with China, and I forgot what the absolute number is, because it's such a moving, it's always a moving number.
It's down to 30. It's the 10% everybody. 30.
So yeah. that might be passable, honorable, but also we say that's not like there were no tariffs. And now, there's a 30% tariff. There are tariffs in place, There may be situations where some of the tariffs with some of the countries are lower than they were before all this.
I doubt
that. It's not like we're going from zero tariffs to all these new tariffs.
I don't think that that's... I'll bet nobody's a positive here. But let's go to break. And I want to talk to you, pick your brain a little bit about what do we really have tariffs on in terms of the shipment. Anyway, SP futures up 17, NASDAQ futures up 83. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right now.
Excuse me, I don't know what happened right there. Just skipped immediately back to our ad. Let me put that right back on. I can toss you right on. Let's see, there we go. You ready to take it cheap, or should I swing us back to the break?
No, we're good. SP futures up 17, NASDAQ futures up 85. Let me get my other page up here and what's going on around the rest of the individual stocks in the Dow. Nothing's going crazy. Yesterday we had that huge move down in United Health. It was down like $60. So that's where the Dow was not up as much as everything else. Yesterday, for way of review, yesterday the Dow, I think, was actually down, but the machine is a little bit, since I got so much stuff going here. Today we've got and NVIDIA's up another $4, so that's like, $10 in 2 days. They got 25 billion shares outstanding, so that's a lot. Yesterday, the Dow was actually down 269, S&P up 42, NASDAQ up 301. Not as big as the day before, but still a big day. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 73.3%, the FTSE up 2, call that flat, CAC around down 29.4%. In Asia, we've got the Nikkei actually kind of quiet today, which it has not been. It's down 55.1%. Hang Seng, however, is up 532, 2.3%. Shanghai up 29.8%. We've got bonds down 2 basis points, 4.47. The blend unchanged at 267. We've got interest rates shooting up the last couple days. They're actually down a little bit today. The 30-year is 4.92. It was 4.94. If that thing goes over 5, it usually is kind of a bell ringer for the market, but I don't think, it's got up here as high before and it's never quite made it to 5 and it goes right back down. We'll see what it does this time. Oil ups down 76 cents, 62.91. Brent down 73, 65.90. Natural gas down 8 cents, 356. RBOB down a penny, 215, but up from the 201 of a few weeks ago. Gold down $29. Gold's been clobbered this week. $32.18. Silver down 41 cents, $32.69. Evidently, China was the safe haven with the gold, and now they are sort of truce. I'm not so sure we ever have a truce with China, but the proposed truce is taking a hit on gold. The euro's back up to 112. It was down under 112 for a while. It was 111 something, and it's back up 1%. British pound back up to 133. It was down from that. So the dollar got real strong, and now it's weakened again a little bit. Crypto down 617, 104.096. What do you have for us, Trevi Withers Sports?
All right, it is 7:34 here in Chicago, May 14th. Just a little bit of sports here. The Cubs won last night over the Marlins with a last-minute comeback, ending their game 5-4. Over in Chicago, it is currently 59 degrees. We're going to have a high of 67 today. We're going to have a slightly cloudy day with a chance of showers throughout the later day. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 65 degrees. They're going to have some sunny skies all throughout, and they're going to have a high of 85. And finally, for Chicago traffic is heavy, nearly all about both inbound and outbound. The inbound Kennedy from O'Hare to the Jamer Interchange is going to take you about 56 minutes. Eden's from Deerfield to Chainburn is going to take you 58 minutes. That's all I got. Back to you, Chief.
Russell, I'm trying to put different pieces together here, and what I'm seeing is that I don't know how this stuff gets counted. I'm just wondering what you and I have talked about antitrust, and I think you're aware, maybe most aren't, that there is a theme to this show, and the theme is that everything affects everything else. There are no individual news stories, I don't think. I talked about one of my clients and friends, was a family member that worked for this IPG, which is the fourth or fifth biggest advertising firm, and they just were taken over by this OMC, we're the second biggest. And of course, in my opinion, our loser Justice Department said, that's fine. Now, you might say, okay, what's wrong with that, Chief? Well, that means now what? One in three have to get together to stay competitive, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you end up like the airlines. Oh, God, you allow this one, you got to allow the next one. So, first thing the guy does, after approval, maybe not the first thing, is lay off like somewhere between 7,000 and 11,000 people and say they're going to ship a lot of those jobs to India. So my question is, I've got something here. I was looked earlier that there's like 1.3 million people working overseas for call centers for companies here. Now, is that if we lob this tariff on place? I mean, it seems like we're focused as an administration on goods and not so much the services.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we lose 4,000 or 5,000 people jobs overseas, that's the equivalent of what? Five huge auto plants? Or 10? I mean, are we?
I don't know how many people would work on it, but yeah.
Are we? Is that service? Is that tariffable? I mean, if I send a check,
it should be.
I bet there's some easy way around it that it's not.
You know, it's more. I say it should be. I don't know if it's an easy way, but having tracking it, I don't know how the hell you would track it. And then if let's say I'm a company and I've done that. Well, you know what? Even better. Let's say they suddenly come up with some sort of tariff rule that you got to pay $5,000 for every employee that's outside of the U.S. Just to, you know, that's a new sort of tariff, and that way, you know, you're balancing out some of the cost of production. So you do something like that. Is that going to have a big impact on Apple?
I don't know. I mean, I don't...
it's not. You know why? They subcontract to Foxconn.
Well, that's what I mean. There's.
Yeah, so,
or you write the check from your,
you know,
your...
When you call a call center in India, and you're calling because you've got an issue with Microsoft or something like that, I severely doubt that's a Microsoft employee.
Oh, it's probably not. There's probably somebody, yeah, you know. There's probably,
it's
you
probably
know
somebody working for a subcontractor. So you know that. You know, how do you charge tariff on that? That's a good question. Because I think you should.
I think my question is: are we?
There definitely should be. If you can, there should be some sort of a tax on.
Well, we just dropped a massive tax on people. with the hope that jobs will come over here and the people that are paying the taxes will now get one of these new high-paying jobs, and in the end it's going to be worth it to them. That's essentially the BS that, that people have been sold. It maybe it works out that way in 5 years, but I know during the 5 years a lot of people are paying a lot of money they weren't before. But let's say it does work out. I wonder if if we're winning or losing here. I mean, we just approved our Justice Department, it does nothing in my opinion. They just approved the Discover Capital One merger. Now, according to Carl, there's four people that process credit cards: American Express, Visa, MasterCard, and Discover. So now, if we take one of those away, does that make any sense?
Well, how does Capital One buying Discover take one away?
Because why do they need two processors? You're gonna leave the cards out there. But why don't you just have the they're gonna say,
well, but Capital One's a huge issuer of.
I'm not talking about they use Visa to do their processing.
With Visas.
So they
purchased a processor.
They either purchased a processor or they purchased Discover and they're going to shut the processor down because they got such a good deal with Visa or MasterCard.
So the Discover card, I mean, do you think they're going to try to convert every Discover card person to a Capital One card?
No, but they might just get rid of the Discover processing group, which unless Carl told us that, I wouldn't know. And all that stuff is subcontracted to Visa.
I can't. Well, but again, why would you buy another company and they just completely shut it down like that?
Well, because the processor, they're looking for
Capital One is one of a zillion Visa, MasterCard issuers. Okay,
forget the part about the issuers. I'm talking about the processors.
Right, but
there's only four processors.
How does it benefit Capital One to buy Discover and put them out of business?
You're not putting Discover. I have a Discover card I use a lot. You're not putting that piece out of business. Discover pays people to do their own processing. Capital One might say, boy, our deal with Visa, if we can add this stuff to it, gets even better, and it's cheaper than what you guys are doing it on your own. I'm saying the processing is separate from buying the customer base.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out how you have... You've got Visa cards, you have Discover cards. A Visa card can't be processed by the Discover people.
Right.
So how is the... I don't see the...
Well, Capital One now has...
My assumption on the Capital One...
All right, let me start from the beginning here. They're going to have... Capital One does all kinds of crap. I have a Bass Pro Shop credit card. It's processed by... You get the bill from Capital One.
Right.
And they have their deal with, I believe, Visa to process it. All right, so if PTI Securities had, 90 bazillion people here, and there was a PTI credit card, it's probably going to be processed by somebody like Capital One, and it's going to be either Visa or MasterCard, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So now the competitor to that is Discover, who has their own card and their own processing. So does American Express. So now, if I buy Discover, I can buy the customer base, meaning me and all the other people that have Discover cards. But now they also have their own processing arm, and they might say, "We got our own processing arm." And by the way, our deal with Visa is a little better in our mind than your deal. We can fire all these people and just run it through our Visa crap, and now the bill's going to come.
You can't. So you're going to convert all the Discover cards to Visas?
No. No, well,
you can't process a Discover card. You can't. If you use a Discover card, the retailer has to accept the Discover card.
Correct.
So, you can't. I don't think there's the opportunity to suddenly have to have people's Visas. Processed by Discover or Discover cards processed by the Visa people.
Why?
Because they're two different systems.
Yeah, okay, what I'm saying is...
I don't want to lose somebody whose whole career has been in this industry.
Well, Carl's the one who brought this up. He says there's only four people that actually process.
Well, yeah, I understand that, but I don't think that there's a... Think of clearing. you can't, you know, you've got different clearinghouses. You can't necessarily, let's just say that, you know, that you can't clear stock trades through CME Group.
But the first thing CME did when they bought the Board of Trade is to close Board of Trade Clearing and merge it with theirs.
Yeah, but that's different. That's a different type of... You've got to be on the same network. You can't. It's just like your American Express is not going to be processed.
I'll bet it's a
Visa or MasterCard transaction.
I'll bet it's a very simple. Well, we'll see how this plays out.
But I don't think that's right. They're different networks.
I will ask Carl on Friday because he's the expert on this stuff, and then I'll report back to you next Wednesday. But I guess what I'm saying is when you have these. I'm getting this weird sense, Russell, is that allegedly we're being told that every man is going to benefit from these tariffs because all of a sudden, and I think to a certain extent some places might. I mean, in Kevin's area, there's a lot of little manufacturers are getting a little bit more business. My nephew's area, if anything comes back here, they service like machines in a lot of these places. If all of a sudden you get a little more business, are they going to need more servicing? Yes. You need a new conveyor belt? Yes. I get sort of that, but I get this weird feeling that we between the mergers, between us offloading some of the, you know, the and not just the call centers, but the guys that are doing all the code and all that stuff overseas. I'm wondering if our guys aren't fighting yesterday's battle and not tomorrow's battle. I mean, is the service part what we're losing on more than we're losing on the goods part? I mean, we've got a president who's seemingly zeroed in on something that was 40 years ago. In some regards, it's all about goods. I'm saying maybe it isn't. And every time they let one of these, you know, these mergers go through, it seems like we lose people. And yet, why are they going through? I mean, they're obviously combinations and restraint of trade. Is there a plan here together? It's all encompassing, and I think there isn't, and it bothers me. It seems like whenever we gain someplace, we lose somewhere else. Or is it just me? Are you there? Did we lose Russell?
Whatever. My phone's being funky.
Okay, it seems like whenever we're winning, we're losing, and now the solution is a big tax on people. I don't see it. I mean, I don't see it. I remember Milton Friedman saying the cruelest tax is inflation. And between our 5% money supply growth, over 5, and with these tariffs, I'd be stunned. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if the inflation next year isn't pushing, you know, 8 or 9%, and he's fighting these 30-year rates being 7 or 8. That's not going to look good.
I'm still in the camp that I want to see with all the negotiations and all the other kind of stuff. How everything works out.
Well, here's
yeah, and it goes to a point. I mean, he's over in the Middle East, and you know, you express some skepticism with respect to the Saudis, but you know what? The Saudis need us. They need us so badly, it's ridiculous. Because if we abandon them, Iran is going to be on their doorstep. Iran's already on their doorstep through Yemen on their southern end. But without us, Saudi Arabia, they know they need us to counterbalance Iran.
All right, so the numbers that I'm being the simple chief here. The numbers I zero in on is I've heard the Secretary of Treasury. I don't know if you saw him in front of Congress the other day. Some guy must have asked him 20 times who actually pays the tariffs, and he refused to answer. But be that as it may, he's come out and said no matter what the negotiations are, the 10% across the board is going to stay. And if individual companies or countries don't play ball with us, whatever the hell that means, give us a plane or something. If individual countries don't, it's going to be higher for them. Okay, the numbers you got, I think you might want to, there are only a couple. Our total imports of goods, now I don't know about the service part, you and I say that seems to be up in the air. The total goods is $3.8 trillion. All right, so if it's 10%, that's $380 billion, and Hal's done some mathematical work, said because those guys might lower some prices or whatever, It might turn out. It might turn out to be 8% or something. Hell's probably right. By the way, I would agree with that. Okay, so we're talking, let's say, $350 billion.
Mm-hmm.
China, we import $380 billion. All right, so a 10% chance on China's $38 billion just from there. Just on the autos is going to be $100 billion at the 10% rate.
Mm-hmm.
Just the autos is bigger than the biggest tax increase we've ever had. So these numbers are kind of awful big to just give them 3 years and see where they land. Because even if they land,
not 3 years, man. They've got 12 to 18 months.
Okay, but I mean,
they've got 12 to 18 months.
Okay, but
that's why it's being pushed so quickly.
But
if you're going to make any big change, especially with a polarizing president like we've got right now, you've got about a year and a half. You've got about a year and a half.
A year and a half.
Anything you want, and then it's all going to start being reversed. Before we even have a chance to see if it worked.
Right. Even so.
We're going to go back to the status quo, and we're going to end up being, you know, a second tier country by the time I die.
Let's hope not.
No, we're going to go right back to the path we were on. And it's just going to be because everybody hates the guy that's in charge and doesn't pay attention to what he's trying to accomplish.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what.
That's what's going to happen. We're going to go back, and I'm going to end up dying somewhere in Europe because I'm going to move away.
Because
this ain't my country anymore.
If I get my 12 flat, if I could afford it, in Ireland, and they have all really nice apartments. Are you in? I get about 10.
See, now the funny thing is, I'm not joking, and you are.
No, I'm not.
No, because it's very. I shouldn't say. For a college professor that you know comes from a decent school and gets pretty good scores from his students, etc. It's real easy for me to move to another country. It's real easy for me to move to another country. It's easy for me to get a work visa because universities kind of have some preference around that kind of stuff. So, I've been kind of, you know, people say they're going to move away, blah, blah, blah. I've always kind of wanted to try to live overseas for some time, before I'm done.
I'm not 25 anymore. I can't wish. Well, I didn't know
the amount of time that I would do that is kind of dependent on the direction of things here.
By the way, you're not alone.
My best friend left the United States about 10 years ago for Hong Kong, and
I wouldn't go that direction. It's not the direction I'd go.
Well, I mean, 10 years ago he was running a software company from here, but all of his own and all of his employees were there, so he just moved over there.
Well, I asked my bro, you know my brother. Nicest guy to ever walk. He's president of PTI Securities. Does a great job for everybody. We're not 25 anymore, but we have my nephew has two spectacular young daughters. One is a spitting image of my grandmother. It's almost eerie. She looks just like her. And I said to my brother, Dan, you know, should we get off our dead ass and get our Irish citizenship and think about if this gets much worse here?
You should have done that a long time ago just for the passport.
I know. I said, should we have an escape route? And he goes, if you're serious, I'm with you. I never even dreamed I'd say that about this country.
When I say to people, I left Chicago because of violence that was directed directly at me.
Yeah.
And you know, not because of what I saw on TV, because of something that happened to me. I probably would not work downtown in Chicago again because of that. I never really thought that I would want to move out of Chicago at one time, and now in fact the guys that I was driving back and forth to Indiana with, one of them, his kids are finishing up college, and he's actually a former Option Institute guy, but I don't think you know him. And he was like, you know, the dream was always to move back downtown to Chicago and retire down there. He said, there's no chance in hell we're going to do that now. And they're trying to figure out, you know, what their next step is. That was ours as well. And no chance in hell that we're going to do that now, period.
No, I mean,
I think that's the, the core of the people moving away from Illinois. It's the people that had that common plan. You know, you met your wife in the Gold Coast, you get married, you move out to the burbs, you give your kids a kick in the butt, they go out into the world, and then you can move back downtown to retire. I think that third step there is where Chicago's losing a lot of people.
Well, it's all part of, I was just mentioning to earlier that my nephew's wife is a teacher, and how she's every time I talk to her about it, she says all we're told to do is push people through.
Yeah.
And I don't see how you and I.
Yeah, there's like I have you seen the list that's floating around that they're like 24 schools in Illinois that 0% of the students are reading at grade level right now, and like only one of them are Chicago public schools.
Yeah. Well, they've got some really good ones.
This governor is one of the guys they're talking about running for president.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
Well, I mean, look at the people we've had run for president in the last 10 years.
Oh, I know. I do.
What do you make of this Supreme Court decision upcoming, where it appears they're going to allow essentially private schools to become charter schools? That could be a real game changer to the positive, I think.
I think it'd be a real game changer for the positive as well. It's unfortunate that some really large public school systems have just deteriorated into, you know, factories that are just pushing kids along.
Why can't?
And they are doing that.
Let me ask you this: Why, whether it's, you know, a Lutheran school or say it's a Catholic school, why can't, where I graduated from, St. John Fisher, why can't they say they are a charter school, and by the way, all the religion classes are going to be held in the church on Saturday morning and not in the school? Why can't they do that?
That's a good question. That's a really good question.
I mean, I don't know what the...
You know, I went to a Catholic school, and I'm not Catholic, and we didn't... If you weren't Catholic, you didn't have to take religion.
Right.
We took ethics and psychology. And I always wondered if that was, in retrospect, I always wonder if that had something to do with some sort of qualification that they needed.
Well, maybe just they don't want to jam people up. It might have just been the parents. I mean, a lot of the quote,
religion. It might have been a state of Tennessee thing, you know.
Well, in grammar school, they were pretty much into the religion. I mean, you went to church
on
first Fridays and Lent and that kind of crap. But, God, talk about 1,600 kids in the church, all going to communion with two priests up there. It took forever. God. But at Marist, you could easily have not been Catholic there. I mean, religion classes were more, you know, history, religion, and scripture, and things like that.
Gotcha.
Even if you were a Lutheran or wherever you were, I mean, you could have felt at home in that. It wasn't, I mean, it wouldn't have made any difference. The scripture is the same for all of them, right, pretty much.
We actually, there weren't too many private schools in Memphis. And we had a lot of Jewish kids.
There's a huge Jewish community in Chattanooga.
There's a gigantic one. Memphis's percentage of the population is like one of the top five in the country.
Really? Because I may know my rabbin was Jewish. Her brother went down there after he graduated, Michael Reese, and was an orthopedic surgeon in Chattanooga. There was a big, huge Jewish population down there.
Nice. So.
And he joined a country club, and he loved it down there. How far are you from Chattanooga?
Memphis is a big hike from Chattanooga, like 5 hours.
Really?
Across the state. It's the, you know, if you think of Tennessee as a big rectangle, Memphis is in the bottom left corner and Chattanooga's in the bottom right corner.
Well, Memphis is on a river, right?
Yeah, and Chattanooga is almost a suburb of Atlanta.
Okay.
But when I lived in Atlanta and alcohol sales were illegal in Georgia, we did a couple of road trips to Chattanooga on Sundays.
We used to go to
an hour and a half.
Well, see, now in Indiana was a real latecomer on booze on Sunday. So there was this bar, and get a load of this. You went across the road, the thing into Michigan, which is only a few miles from Notre Dame. And there was a road that you made a left on. Actually, the road curved back into Indiana. And there was a saloon on the right side of the street called Kubiak's. And I think across the street, the parking lot was in Indiana. But the bar was in Michigan. We'd go there on Sunday night. And Sunday night was polka night. And they got all these old, you know, basically Polish ladies in there. If you were a student, they were a lot of fun. They'd be like 55, 60 years old. And if you and I went in there and started drinking beer, all of a sudden, one of the older Polish ladies would come over and grab you by the scruff of the shirt and say, "You're dancing." And out you were doing a polka. They were
there to dance. Fantastic.
And you know what? You kind of learned. I was awful, always a pretty awful dancer. But you know what? It was a good time. They were great. Hey, if you're here, it's polka night. You're polking, buddy. Up you go. And they drag you out there.
That's right. You walk through the door. There's a contract.
Yeah. And you know what? I don't, nice people I ever met. I mean, I just hoped I never got grabbed too much because I hated dancing. But you're sitting there drinking your pitcher of beer on a Sunday night. It's like, I could always find a spot, you know, and I was pretty good at that. But anyway, what do you think we're going to go up another 5 days in a row, or is this?
I think we'll probably start to level out now that all the excitement of all the announcements is getting behind us. All right, let's see. He's got the Middle East on board. He got China sort of on board. We'll see how that works out.
Well, you know, part of this is. You create the tempest in the teapot one day, and you tell everybody you sold it the next. There's such I'm not saying that there aren't any positive developments from some of this, because I really will see, like you say, I'll let it all play out. But it's stunning to me how many people are not picking up on the gamesmanship.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they're picking up on it. They talked about it at the conference that I was at yesterday. They said, One of the smartest things that he did was he announced all this stuff and never told you what the end game was going to be. That way it will never look like he failed on it.
Well, yeah, you declare victory all the time. I mean, it's a so are you end of the quarter?
One really important thing: my couch did not move during the whole show because I sat on it. Therefore, I am declaring victory because that was my goal.
Well, the dog's up there with you, right?
Yeah, two. We one of them is going away today.
This is the one you. That's a little. He's busy.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. He's busy. He's last week at the end of the program, I looked to my left and he was standing on the kitchen table with a salt shaker in his mouth.
God.
Some stuff you can't make up, man.
Oh, I know.
But the dog's less than a year old. He's finding his way. How's that?
Nancy's got a little one. She has two. What are they? They kind of look like the long haired British. The hell they are, but the smaller guys. And
are the corgis?
No, it's they got the long hair. They almost look like a cocker spaniel, but
King Charles spaniel.
Yeah, King Charles. So yeah. She decides she needs another one. The two older ones are getting up there, right? She gets this little guy. Talk about busy. The dude's like he's on. She must have some place. She must have some greenies in the house somewhere that he goes and eats. But he is so busy. And the other two dogs just look at him and go, "What the hell is he doing?"
That's the day to day life experience in the Rhodes household right now.
Anyway,
but she is. Poppy's going to her forever home today.
All right. Well, good. I'm sure the people that are grabbing her are going to be good people, and she have a good life.
That's right. Exactly.
You take care of yourself. Talk at you next week. SP Futures up 750. So it's the Options Industry Council spot for a beginning person. Okay.
Thank you. I see.
Thank you for that. Yeah. SP Futures up 8. NASDAQ is up 41. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.